Welcome to Overshare, a podcast and event series where we have honest conversations about the tough shit creatives don't publicly talk about often enough. We cover topics like creative insecurity, career failures, and how not to become a total douchebag when you finally gain some notoriety. Our goal is to get to know the creative industry beyond the highlights of portfolios and Instagram feeds, and to better understand the ups and, more importantly, the downs of what it takes to get there. Struggles we can all relate to, even if we haven't reached all-star status quite yet. Overshare was created by Working Not Working, an invite-only community that connects companies with the universe's most respected, most awarded, and hardest working creatives in advertising, design, production, and tech. Companies like Apple, Airbnb, Droga5, and the New York Times use Working Not Working to discover and hire talent for freelance and full-time gigs. Learn more at workingnotworking.com. This episode is brought to you by our friends at FreshBooks, an intuitive tool to simplify how freelancers and small businesses create and send invoices to their clients. With FreshBooks, you can create invoices, log receipts, manage expenses, and all that other crap us creatives hate to do. God, I'm so bad at that stuff. Anyway, to claim your free month, go to freshbooks.com/overshare and enter overshare in the How Did You Hear About Us section. There might be some swearing here, so if anybody, we're gonna do a shot first to make it easier. Cheers.
Cheers.
Hey, I'm Justin Genak, co-founder of Working Not Working. This episode is a recording from our very first Overshare event in February 2016. We hosted it in New York City on a Friday afternoon at the Crocodile Lounge on 14th Street. We really just wanted to get people together in a basement bar, have some beers, eat some pizza, and have an honest conversation about what it's like to be a creative. So thanks to everyone who skipped work for a few hours to hang out with us while I interviewed Lita Soburowski and Wade Jeffrey. Both are incredibly talented designers and two of my favorite people, and they're also a couple who got married 3 weeks before the event. I decided to cause some conflict. I prodded a little into the competition that must come up as a creative couple, asked them some super personal questions, which they were very polite to answer, honestly. And they discussed everything from quitting high-profile jobs, trying not to get deported, dealing with internet trolls, and in the spirit of oversharing, even asked them about the Squatty Potty. So here's my conversation with Lita and Wade.
They just got married 3 weeks ago. Yeah. Welcome, guys. All right, so I'm gonna try to get this going. I'm gonna take a page out of James Lipton's book and just fire some questions at you. We're gonna start with, what's your favorite curse word?
Fuck.
Okay, good.
I'm Australian, so it's naturally cunt.
Cunt.
I'm sorry, Mom. I like to think that, like, fuck is my favorite one, but then I realize it's shit, because I say it all the time. So I'm gonna say it like 30 times. Maybe start a drinking game, how many times I say shit during this.
I feel like shit's a little more versatile than fuck.
They're both pretty versatile.
Yeah.
Where'd you guys meet?
Okay, Cupid.
My wife and I met on MySpace, so.
Oh my God.
I just dated myself. All right,
You should have said LiveJournal. That would have been.
Friendster.
I didn't even know Friendster.
All right, really pressing question. Finish a sentence. Wade smells like?
Ass.
Wow. Okay.
All right. No.
I'm good for it, man.
I'm good for it. All right, Lita's best quality is?
Everything.
Everything. All right.
I'm sorry, you don't always smell like ass.
You offended me. I can't answer these questions.
No. Yeah.
So this is going to be worse. What Wade's most annoying quality is?
Sometimes he speaks too quietly, maybe.
All right. Perfect for this environment.
Perfect, yeah. My next question is your last fight was about, but we kind of know what it might be about. Yeah.
What was it about?
Saying I took too long.
Oh, yeah. Lita takes too long in the morning. Putting on makeup. No, I'm not even putting on makeup. I don't even know what it is. But that's what it's about.
But it's pretty petty.
Yeah.
Who's better at kerning?
Probably, maybe Wade.
I'll take it.
I have to always ask him everything to, like, approve of everything I've done, so.
Okay.
I'd say Wade.
We'll take that. Do you guys own a Squatty Potty?
I wish.
No, but we have a bucket that sometimes
Wait, you poop in the bucket?
The role. No, Squatty Potty, right?
Let's throw it out the window.
You put your feet on top of it,
yeah.
Just so that you can have a better.
Right.
Yeah.
This is overshare, guys. This is overshare.
Sometimes we use it for laundry.
Sometimes it's laundry, sometimes it's elevating your legs. Okay.
Squatty potty on a budget, man.
Sometimes it's for shitting better.
Yeah. Squatty potty on a budget. Who has more Instagram followers?
Me.
No. I know, I checked this morning. It's 11,000. 11,700 more. Yeah.
Whoa.
We'll get more into that later. Okay. So more serious stuff. You guys are both risk takers. Seems like you, for one, had a stable, good job, but most people would assume, and then you quit to do your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Okay, so the first 3 years of my career, like when I graduated from college, I went down a motion graphics route. So I started, my first job was in a design but also stop motion studio. And that was really great. And then from there, I decided to take things further. And I went to a VFX house, which I realized I hated instantly. I think my first or second day, I was just like, fuck, this is the wrong decision. Fuck, how long do I have to be here? So I was there for 8 months. And then I went to another studio after that that was more like commercial motion graphics, some stop motion stuff too. Realized it just was terrible. I didn't like the people I was working with. I didn't like my boss. The company wasn't doing so good, and so it just got to a point where I was like, fuck this, like, I know what I want to do, like, let's just, it's time to start over. I wiped my portfolio completely from all of the work that I had done for the past 3 years and just started loading it up with personal projects. And
that's scary.
Yeah, that was really scary, because I had, you know, people want to say, like, oh, have you done work for, like, what kinds of work have you done? And it's like, this photo, and maybe, like, a little, like, my personal stationery. Yeah. So all of that stuff was on my portfolio, but I kept on adding things to it and eventually started getting jobs based off of those personal projects, which has gradually led me to where I am now.
That's great. It takes a lot, though, to say, all right, fuck all this, I'm going to quit my job and have, like, nothing to show for it. Like, yeah.
I think after you've had enough nights of just going home and crying and calling your mom and not knowing what to do. I mean, I wasn't dating anyone at the time either, so I felt very alone and couldn't really confide in anyone with my decisions.
Yeah.
I had friends, but they were all in very different departments. Like, they weren't in design, so they couldn't relate.
And then what gave you the courage to be able to say that final fuck it, I'm going to do it?
I don't know. I mean, it had been building up for a while, I think. Like, I don't know, my boss at the time was very chauvinistic, male, like, threw his weight around. I just couldn't deal with it.
Yeah. It was just too much.
Yeah, it was too much.
That's good. Wade, you have a slightly different story.
Yeah, I left Australia, essentially, and that was the big risk.
Were you deported, or did you
not,
do
it? luckily not.
Okay, good.
I can go back. finished university, worked for a year and saved money for a road trip to come to America. Did a road trip for 2 months and sort of left it sort of open to coming to New York and just seeing what would happen.
So your first experience was a cross-country trip across America.
Yeah, starting. So, and I had visa problems there. Leaving it, so the other country gave me the trouble. So I was meant to do the West Coast, didn't do the West Coast, and landed in Vegas to start the trip. And then went across. So landing in Vegas after 36 hours in transit, you can imagine, like, how fucking...
Welcome to America.
Scary it was.
There's, like, somebody dressed as a dinosaur in front of you.
Yeah, I tipped the cab, because we don't have tipping in Australia. I tipped him, like, fucking $20 or something. I was like, this is green here, take it. Like, I did that, came to New York, and sort of tried to... sort of figure myself out as much as sort of figure out career as well. So I had been in contact with design studios before leaving Australia, contacted them again, telling them I was here, met with a few and, like, got some opportunities, but, like, ultimately figured out that I didn't want to be doing design for my first amount of time in a new country, a new city that I was really excited about. So I started selling shoes at Nike for 6 months. So I could be flexible, like freelancers are. Still not doing that, but and sort of experience the city and sort of ultimately figure out what I was doing.
So wait, did you guys apply for the same job?
I don't know if it was directly at the same time, but we both had interviews with Roland Co. And, like, essentially, there was an offer there for me, and we still talk to OAM, we're friends with her and everything, but it was kind of, that was the point in which I was like, you know what, I don't want to be sitting in front of a computer. I'd rather be, you know, meeting people and meeting a core group of friends as much as seeing the city, and I made that switch. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it was all about my happiness before sort of a career mindset, mm-hmm. knowing that I had not the luxury, but the freedom to do it for a short amount of time. And if I didn't do it then, I would probably never do it again. Yeah.
And you get those sweet discounts on sneakers.
Yeah. Became really good at running, and I had a lot of sneakers, yes.
You have a lot of sneaker knowledge.
That's good.
I had applied when I was still working in motion graphics and was looking for a potential like job out of what I was doing. Yeah. But of course, I didn't have a lot of work in my portfolio that was like worthy of working in like a design, branding, print, web house.
Yes, you didn't have the stuff to show for it.
So
now you do.
Yeah, now I do.
That's great. Now, is it difficult being in a relationship with someone who does such similar things?
No.
No.
It's really relieving, actually, because when either of us come home, we're able to talk about every minute detail of our days and the projects that we're doing, and we understand each other completely, which is great. I don't think that I could be in a relationship where our lives are so different and so separate that we don't understand, like, what the fuck we're doing.
Yeah, it's. I think it's a common misconception in some ways that people believe that they shouldn't be in the same industry because they don't want to overwhelm themselves with work. But I think, and I guess I'm speaking for Lita here, like the life and work balance, work, life, life, work is so intertwined in our thinking and what we do. And it's essentially, we're always together. Like we're kind of inseparable. If I wasn't a mother, we'd be fucking together all the time. So like even if it's on the weekends, it's sort of, we're collectively forming opinions, but also disagree on things. So it's critical yet relaxing to know that you can sort of offset frustrations, but also get critical input from the other person in the relationship.
Yeah, and then how do you make time, though, for the relationship part of all of that?
I feel like they're intertwined. I mean, there is never on time and off time. I feel like it's always, even if we're working together, our on time will, I don't know, evolve into something else sometimes.
And it's like compliments.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's like an understanding of the person you're with and what their moods are like as much as like what they're doing. So you can sort of like counteract things, but also things like compliments kind of help that in the sense of like if we're doing something collectively.
Do you want to explain what compliments is?
Compliments is a portrait series that Wade and I have been doing for the past two years,
like that,
I think. It's
being a bit more slack in the last 6 months.
Yeah, just because of other things happening. Yeah. But it's a series in which we try to portray different emotions in each portrait, and we've done about 56 of them right now or so.
Yep.
Aiming to get to 100.
Yeah.
What have been your favorites?
Powder was great. I feel like the naked ones are always a bit more successful than the clothed ones.
Because they get more likes?
Yeah, somebody's like, there's a nipple.
Nice. Figured out how the internet works. Way to go. You guys really solved that Rubik's Cube.
Free the nipple.
No, but I think that, I mean, ones that definitely take more time, that require a bit more involvement, ones that definitely feel more emotional, like, we've also, one of the reasons why we've stopped doing it for a little while is just because we're trying to redirect the mood of the entire series. So some things we've done in the past have been a little funny, not funnier, but a little easier, like a little too simple. And we want to make things a little more complicated. We want to make things a little more emotional.
Yeah, I think it started when we were sort of still youngish, I guess, in our relationship. And I guess it's the like maturing of our relationship as much as the like it's always been about showcasing something about our relationship in some way or shape or form. Yeah. So I think, you know, with maturity comes that altering as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you guys deal with, in general, how do you deal with creative insecurity? Because I don't know, does everybody deal with that or am I the only one?
Yeah.
All right, so everybody deals with
it. We all do.
We all deal with it. How do you guys deal with it?
Hey, is this a shit idea?
Yeah, I confide in Wade.
And you guys are honest with each other?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Totally.
Yeah.
Direct, no bullshit, no filter.
And then how often is it an idea that you love and you tell Lita and she's like, that's shit, and then it kind of crushes you a little bit?
Well, generally, if it is something like that, I'll generally have a thinking or behind it.
Yeah.
And then I go into the explanation and then I get another opinion.
Yeah.
You know, but it depends what kind of idea it is, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice to have someone that you can trust, though, and lean on.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
What else have we got? Are you guys competitive with each other?
I think I get a little competitive. I think Wade is less competitive. But it's also a motivator, so I'll see Wade doing a different project or a new project, and I'll feel inspired and think, oh, if Wade's taking on more projects, I can probably take on more projects.
because you've proven
it's possible. But it's healthy.
Yeah.
So far. Yeah,
it's the same thing. I guess we'll see. I guess it's the same thing for me. It's more of a motivation than anything else.
When you're working so much together, how does your individual styles influence each other's work? And do you find your styles now are merging more than they were as individuals?
I think it's styles, reference points, and influences that are between us are so drastically different, and which sort of like help the work become better. Like Lita's photographic mind has more a totally different world in which I would sort of look to, and both within design itself, like what I'm into is not necessarily what she's into. I'm into like cold modernism, and you know, has a bit more expressive. So it's like it just filters into one another, and when we work collectively for design kind of projects, I think it does nothing but to help it feel, because we're coming from both spectrums, like more human in a lot of senses. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
We haven't had too much opportunity to combine those forces yet, but hopefully in the future. I mean, we're starting to a little bit. Like, we've done a branding project together, and
it's the advantage of getting married, guys.
Yeah.
You can do more together.
This is why it's
restrictions start to settle off a little bit.
Sham marriage. Yeah, it's on record. It's totally on record. Shit.
No, but we do really love each other. Just to
prove it. No. Okay. So here's just a total broad question. Why do you do what you do?
After trying a lot of things that I didn't like doing, I finally stumbled upon something that I really enjoy doing. That has, I guess, pushed me. I don't know, like being the liberty of working individually is great because you can take all of the time you want to really manifest either a style or an ideology. Like, you can establish your own principles, and yeah. I think that over time I've been able to discover that, and that is the reason why I do what I do now.
Yeah. And do you find, how do you filter ideas or projects that come in and know if they fit within that ideology or not?
Mm-hmm. That has also taken time and bad decisions, good decisions. I think that as you start to progress in your practice, you learn what you're going to excel at and what you're not going to excel at. You can also start reading other people's personalities. Like, sometimes you'll have a really horrible client meeting and just think immediately, this job's gonna suck.
Yeah, and trusting your gut.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How are you, Ed?
The question was, why do we do what we do?
Well, that, or and then how do you know what projects to take on or not? Like, I guess you're in a different situation because mm-hmm. you're full-time at a studio, so you're taking on the projects that come in there, but then you're also doing some side projects as well.
Yeah, I guess I found out why I loved graphic design at kind of like an early age. Like, I didn't start doing graphic design. I started doing art first and fine art, painting, kind of sculptural things, and realized that, I guess, once I did one graphic design course, that there was a power in graphic design and design in general, like mm-hmm. to like not only like influence culture, but you know, empower people. And I think there's something really beautiful in that. I still believe that, and it's kind of why I'm doing what I'm doing and why I'm working where I'm working.
Yeah.
Because you can do that on a bigger scale, and if you can do that, I think that that's a really amazing thing. So that's why I do it. In terms of managing things out, other jobs, and knowing how to work them, I think as you sort of get further in your career, it's just about like sensitivity to people, which relates to that first kind of answer, in that if
like
you can
their personalities and
yeah if you can understand people, you ultimately are going to make better design, because design is not just for yourself as a person, it's for other people. And right. you know, if your vibe check is good, you can ultimately start to be doing the work and choosing things that are going to be more fulfilling.
And finding easier. The right partners. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Because like all jobs are essentially collaborations, and I don't like to put it on like job 2-2-2-2-2-2. It's like, what's the you're collaborating with someone to make something. So.
Right.
Could you ever imagine yourself doing anything else, or is this the is all end all?
Yeah, what's the other job?
What's the other job? I think it would just be something all-encompassing within design and creativity. I don't think writing would never work. If anything, I guess art, but that's still within this spectrum. And I think what's great about design is that it teaches you a way of thinking that you can definitely jump into another lane and start thinking in a similar way, but with a different medium. Yeah. So I don't know, I can't see myself doing anything outside of those parameters.
Here's the thing, and I think it's something that I struggled with for a long time. Do you feel like you have something to prove? For me, it was a big motivator early on in my career. I saw other people that were prolific in making personal projects and all that, and I felt like, oh, I need to do that to prove that I can, and to prove to other people that I was clever enough to you know, I don't know, pay attention to. Do you feel any of that?
I think I definitely did.
Yeah.
I don't know if I feel it anymore, but I think, especially when I was working a full-time job in sort of a different route, and I was seeing all of the amazing things that other individuals were making, and I punched myself for it. I just think, like, I want to do this. Why can't I do it? Why don't I get those opportunities? But it's, of course, because I'm working at a full-time job, and none of my portfolio shows that any of those things are possible. Right. So I was envious of people, and I was jealous. But I realized that you can't do anything with those emotions. I mean, those can be motivators, but they're not always good ones.
Yeah, and they don't do anything for you besides occasionally motivating you or dragging you down.
Yeah.
Wait, do you feel like you have something to prove?
There's always something to prove, but it depends how you want to angle it, I think. And, like, if I ever get frustrated or want to prove myself to anyone, it's generally because I feel like there's a, you know, with, like, Instagram followers and all that, you can have a voice that can influence someone, and I feel like when there's a misuse of that is when I get most frustrated, and that's what I want to prove, is like that you don't need to be an asshole, or you know, you don't need to be having these points of views that are so negative in order to make something good. So it's generally a sort of a bounce off of that, I think.
Well, so that's a good segue to my Instagram question. Does having 40 or 50,000 followers give you anxiety?
No.
Especially, well, you're kind of like a quiet, like, you know, solitary person. We've talked about like how you like to be yourself. That's a very opposite thing, you know, to have that many people following you. Do you feel like you're suddenly creating stuff for an audience and likes, or are you just putting out stuff that you would put out anyway?
For me, no.
No?
No, because I'll post stupid shit as much as I post serious photos from compliments or anything else. Like, it's a platform for me to show what I'm genuinely interested in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if it goes outside of that, it's kind of like, it's misleading.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, I'd be asking the question, why do we teach? Like, if we were, because we teach at SVA, it's like, if you're teaching for anything other than to help people, then you're fucking deluded, man. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
So, It comes to that kind of platform for me.
I thought you'd teach you to get really inexpensive workers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We're just going to hire them all after they graduate.
Yep. Yeah. So you get first dibs on the 40K here, creative 30K. How do you handle trolls on the internet? Do you guys get, like, do you read your comments when people write comments and stuff? Do you get people hating?
I mean, they're really stupid things, though. It's like, why is she blue? You know, like, so it's not, I mean, I don't think it's anything
really
too critical.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
I like to always relate that back to a Chappelle show skit where they had it was like a FedEx, a Kinko's, and he was behind the shop, and the guy was complaining, and he's like, you know why I didn't give that guy the paper? Fuck him. That's why. I was like, that's my mentality. Yeah.
Fuck him. That's why. Yeah. Can someone tweet that quote? That's a really good one. All right, let's get to some slightly more serious stuff. What's been the most challenging point in your career?
I wouldn't say it's a challenging point within my career. It's once again that thing of coming to New York and sort of like having to not settle down, but like find my feet again. Because I was comfortable in Melbourne, like I was at a job that was good, I was learning, and I knew that that would sustain itself, but it was just about seeing what I could do on a bigger platform. And I guess that's, you know, if you're always, when you're testing the waters is both the scary part, but also the most exciting, because the rewards can yield so much more.
What was your biggest fear when you first started?
Being able to financially sustain myself and, you know, be able to pay for an apartment and feed myself. And
is that still your fear? or has that gone away?
No, I think it's gone away. I don't plan very far in the future. I mean, when I think about what's going to happen, I try to think about 6 months in advance, but not, you know, 5 years in advance. So when I was starting out, I wasn't thinking like, oh, I'm going to get a studio space and I'm going to, I hope I can pay for that. So maybe I need to take on gigantic jobs and
be soulless. Kind of living within your means, and then as work comes, you can do more.
Things progress, and it's kind of nice to do it that way because you're constantly surprised with whatever happens and with whatever opportunities you get, and you're not always bringing your expectations too high and being let down, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's like allowing for whatever opportunities are going to come and being open to that. Because I think a lot of people are like, oh, my God, I need to get to here.
Right.
And then they're so, like, focused on here that they don't see this opportunity that's over here, this opportunity over here that could lead them in really interesting directions.
Yeah. I think I've always been a person who's planned really far in advance in the past, and it's really difficult
stressful.
To let go and just embrace the moment, but it's also something that's so much more relieving to do than constantly be waiting or wishing for something more to happen.
Well, I think it's a hard thing, like being a person that's ambitious, because you're always wanting more, and it's like it's hard to be okay with where you are now and not constantly be looking in the future. Mm-hmm. Like I find myself doing that. I'm like, oh, well, once we do this in 2 years or in a year and all that, and it's just like, well, today's pretty awesome. Like, why not be cool with this, you know? And I think that's it's a hard thing to take yourself out of that ambitious mindset to be able to appreciate all the great things that are happening along the way. Mm-hmm. Wade, what's your biggest fear?
Being sent back to Australia.
That's a legit fear.
It is, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, I would come with you, though. I'd be like, I got this whole apartment to myself.
Fuck that guy.
That worked out great.
Two rooms and a studio? I didn't know I could have this. Yeah.
How about biggest regret?
I wouldn't say I have one. Yeah.
Lila, do you have any?
I don't think I have one either. I mean, ultimately, eventually, I would love to live somewhere aside from New York because I was born in New York. I was raised in New York State. I've never left New York.
Yeah.
So I'd like to not move to somewhere in the United States, but move elsewhere and just completely...
You guys have been to Tokyo a lot.
Yeah.
You guys are going to move to Japan. this is the big announcement right here. We got married and peace out. How about... I feel bad asking this. Biggest insecurity?
I always end up comparing myself, I think, to others or other people's successes. And that's a motivator, but it's also kind of self-deprecating, I guess.
Yeah. Totally. Wade?
I don't know. I don't like focusing on negatives. So I don't.
You're a pretty positive person.
Yeah, I think there's always the silver lining, but like
maybe smelling like ass.
That's it. Having fucking a bad smell about you, you know, it's a pretty bad thing. But
no, you smell really good.
You can always cover it up, man.
Smells great. You guys can hug it. It smells really nice. How about like a
he your... smells like sandalwood.
Sandalwood.
Just letting you know.
Nice. Great scent. A great word, too.
Mixing it up, I'm confused now.
When he farts, you don't want to be around him.
What's your biggest frustration right now with either personally or your career?
With my career?
Yeah.
Sometimes getting clients for bigger companies to take me seriously because I work as one person and I'm trying to take on larger projects, and sometimes people don't believe that I can handle it.
Now, do you hire your friends to come into the studio and then you give them a tour? Here's my 10 people, this is my team. It's what like every ad agency does, by the way.
Yeah.
Every agency I've ever worked at, like new business pitch, there'd be like four times as many people in the office that actually work there. Yeah. It's all about perception. Mm-hmm. That's good. How about you, Wade?
What was the question?
Frustration. Do you have any frustrations?
Not enough time, the same as everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. So I'm working at Mother, not long hours or anything, but like enough hours. So to be able to pursue the other things outside of that, like all 50 million of the self-initiated projects and everything else. You know, it's just tricky to fit it in within time without burning yourself out, which I'm really conscious of. So,
or doing a shitty job at something.
Exactly. Yeah. What is it? Jonathan Ellery of Brown's in the UK is like, fear mediocrity is like his statement, and I, like, yeah, yeah, I think that that's a true thing.
That makes sense. Yeah. What's your Achilles heel as a creative?
Caring too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Wanting to do a good job for everything.
Yeah.
That's not.
Which is what should be expected.
Yeah.
So like not letting certain things go, and they're just.
Yeah.
That, or maybe sometimes I can be, I can provide too much clarity, and come off as something else potentially.
A total brick.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. A deep bag.
Do you have a nemesis? That's
a good one.
Is it Phil?
It's Phil.
Wade, do you have a nemesis? Like, there's some dick at work. Lead as your nemesis? All right, good.
Yeah.
All right.
Enemies, keep your enemies closer, man.
What's one thing that pisses you off about the industry?
Negativity.
Negativity.
Are you afraid you've peaked?
No, not at all.
No, you don't think you're peaked? Very cool.
I think I'm just starting to get to where I want to get.
That's good. I like the quote, always be peaking. different peaking. I think I made that up, but I think it's a good one. You guys can all like beautifully letter that if you want. Okay. If you're doing work that's trendy, how do you make it your own?
Color.
Well, if color's trendy, how do you make your...
Oh, I don't know.
Point of view.
Yeah, I guess point of view.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm just going fast with these. What is success?
Being happy.
Yeah, happy in life. Happy in work, happy in life.
My next question, are you happy?
Yes.
Toad's happy,
okay. If you had to give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Get your visa earlier so you can come and do the West Coast and not get fucked up by the government.
It's always the government.
Don't work in motion graphics.
Okay, that's good. And finally, how are you feeling right now?
Drunk.
Oh, nice. Weird.
Tipsy.
Buzzing, man.
All right, well, thank you guys for oversharing.
Thank you.
Now, if anybody has questions or wants to just get something off their chest, or, you know, we're a family here. It's a safe zone. Does anybody have anything they want to ask or say? Can I give you the mic, or can you?
I can project.
Okay, yeah, let's project.
I like that it's a hot mic.
Day-to-day, like, do you have any routines that you do each day to, like, help with your creative process, or, like, when you're working, like, do you have any rhythms that you go into?
Mm-hmm. I think what's good now that we have a space, so... life and work feel a little bit separated. I mean, every day when I was working from home in our apartment, we have all of our equipment, all of our photo stuff, all of our computer stuff, so there would be no separation. So now it's great to have breakfast, have coffee, then go up to Greenpoint, which is where our studio is now, and go up to Greenpoint and have that be the marker of like the start of the work day. And it makes a huge difference.
For me, like a routine thing, because I've got to go to Midtown 11th and 42nd every day, fucking the pits of hell.
Basically Jersey.
Yeah. I've got a lot of time on my hands, essentially, so I try to like motivate myself by what I'm doing on the subway, whether that be like my Insta paper is just like stacked with shit, but also like little challenges that I do, like little creative challenges. I should think of a better name, I guess, but like on the L train from Grand Street to 2nd Ave, can I think of something that will yield a project? And let's like get my brain kicking in those senses so then when I get to work, I can sort of like...
And are you doing that standing there? Are you writing notes in your phone? Do you have a sketchbook?
Thinking, then Evernote. Yeah.
Evernote's huge.
That's fun to like put a time constraint on it. Like, yeah, like... 4 stops.
Yeah, and if it's...
What can you do?
It's more... And then there's more constraints to that usually. It's like, what's a zine idea, a book idea, an app idea, like what's that, and then fit it within that kind of rationale.
Yeah, I used to have a sketchbook where at the top of every page I wrote a different thing, like candle design, shirt idea, light bulb, you know, or light fixture. And then I was trying to like rethink all of those things. So whenever I'd just be bored, I'd just go in there and just write like, all right, what's a different candle design? All right, cool. But it's like, it's nice to put those parameters on things. And then like, you know, it's a good way to like stay busy.
Yep.
Yeah. Definitely.
I have a question.
Yes.
How do you guys creatively recharge?
Go to Tokyo.
Or we have a bit of a routine on Saturdays where we try to separate ourselves from doing any work by going to either a museum or going to galleries in Chelsea. And it's great because we're still, you know, you're still kind of on, like you're looking for inspiration, but you're not actively creating things. So you're second-handedly feeding off of other creative ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good.
I feel like we never fully turn off.
Yeah, always turned on.
Always turned on. We can tweet that one too. Way Jeffrey always turned on. I like it. Yes.
How did you promote your personal work after you wiped your portfolio clean and were starting over?
I emailed a lot of people that I knew, emailed people I didn't know. I wrote some weird emails to companies that I wanted to work with, though probably knew that they wouldn't get back to me. I mean, would look at random companies and say, hey, I would love to redo your website for you. Here's my portfolio.
Adorable. Did it work?
No. Okay. I was 23, I think. But yeah, definitely reaching out to people that you know around you, especially in the New York City community, there are so many people who can help you out. Like, the design community is very small, but consequentially, everybody tends to have a connection, so that really benefited me.
Yeah, it's good to put your needs and your wants out there, because then people, you know, especially if you've been good to people, they're going to find ways to help you.
Absolutely.
Like my dad gave me a good piece of advice, and he says, help enough other people get what they want, and you'll always get what you want. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it's really crucial to be part of the community, because then if you're doing things that are selfless for a long time, then when you actually need something and you just put it out there in a conversation, like usually good things happen. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we're going back to your comment about feeling like clients taking you seriously as an independent, mm-hmm. you know, studio. Do you find, or like, how do you handle, I have a lot of people who will come to me because of work that I've done for other clients, and they'll be like, oh, I have this thing and I need a logo or I need this, and but you know, I don't really have much money.
What's that Chappelle show quote?
Fuck them.
Fuck them. I don't think that works all the time.
It's hard. It's like, how do you decide who you can help? And there's so many hours in a day. And
but I think it's important to be decisive. I mean, I've taken on projects with small, independent people. I've definitely done pro bono work, or I've done projects for just trade. But those have been some really influential projects for me. So I think that having the trade-off of being able to do what you want creatively is really important. But also, I guess sometimes working with clients who can lead to other potential opportunities. So it definitely takes a bit of intuition. Also, just being upfront and being able to have that complete, being explicit about what you want, like what you can benefit from the opportunity as well, I think is important.
You also need to weigh at what point in your bank account you're at. Like, yeah, you can't go and say yes to that little thing that someone, or big thing that someone's asking you to do for basically free. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of like really seeing like what you're going to get out of it, and if it's going to be the right thing for you right now. But yeah, every opportunity could be a great one. Mm-hmm. But you also got to like stand pretty firm and not sell yourself short. And if they can't afford you now, maybe they can afford you a little later.
I guess the one thing that sometimes becomes frustrating for designers is that people think that you can do a gigantic branding project on $3,000, which, you know, it's
in
like we have, in a week, but we have to make our lives as much as our clients do, and it's frustrating when they don't realize that.
Well, also, if it's a brand where you can trade shit, I traded a membership to a co-working space, you know, if it's a watch company or if it's a booze brand, whatever, like, if it's something you're excited about and you're passionate about, I'd be like, yeah, hook me up and, you know, I'll give you a little bit of a deal on my rate.
Two of my most successful projects were done for trade, and that was my Odd Pairs project and my Art Collective project, and I got watches and I got socks. That was the most creative freedom I've ever been able to have with projects, and that definitely has given me leverage.
Awesome. Great answer. Thank you.
That's great. Your question?
I have two questions, actually. With a follow-up question, you said that cold emailing random companies didn't work. So what did work, or what has worked? And the second question is, what's your approach towards personal projects? Maybe like you build in your own parameters, like how you
So first, what worked for getting clients?
The cold email didn't work.
The cold emails didn't work. A lot of referrals worked. I joined Working Not Working and actually met Justin that way. I think
that's
that,
your ass.
I've only taken one job on Working Not Working though.
And that's how we met.
Yeah, and that's how we met.
I was demoing at an agency. What was it? It was something
CHI and Partners.
Yeah, CHI and Partners, and I went in there and I'm like, wait, are you, how do you say your name, Lita? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, you just joined Working Not Working, right? Yeah. And I'm like, I recognize you from your profile picture. And she joined like that week and she was like in that place.
So. Yep, yep. So that worked. And then getting referrals for other projects, like other people who had worked with other people and being referred to those companies. Like I was an in-house designer for a non-design company for a little while, which was great to start out at. I was like a block away from Wade, so we had just started dating and we could get coffee together, which was fun.
What percentage of your work now do you think comes out of the personal projects, even the ones that all back in the day where you were doing, you know, weird stuff with paint and sets and all that?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like you did that stuff because you were excited about it, and that's led to work, that's led to more work, and that kind of seems like that was, like, the birth of everything by just doing the shit you want to do.
I think that's 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, like, put things out in the world that you want to make, and then hopefully it lures people in. Like, you shouldn't, you know, ideally, none of us should have to look for work. Like, we should be putting stuff out there that, you know, is finding work for us. But I think focusing, you know, like if you have any downtime or you're frustrated at your job and you have a night and a weekend, do stuff that makes you really excited. And I think the parameters are helpful. I think also sitting on ideas, like I have, and we all have lots of ideas, and I had them in sketchbooks, and then I had them on a wall. Like the New York Magazine approval matrix was one of my goals, so I put all my ideas and post-it notes on there. But then, like, when you sit on an idea for 6 months, you're like, there's some that just keep coming back and keep bugging you. When the other ones that you thought was the best idea ever, you're like, oh my God, that was so lame. So, you know, I think it's, people feel like you have to have a personal project and go do it, but it's okay to, like, let stuff simmer a little bit and see what floats to the top.
One thing that's really big for us too is just collaborating with other people who do things that we don't do.
Yeah.
And that's really helpful in creating new diverse pieces for your portfolio and also trying something that you and your friend have probably never done before.
Yeah, because it always comes down to, none of us know fucking everything, and like, people are better at things than you are, and if you can't face that, then you're a little confused. Cause, like, I'm not a fucking photographer, so you get one that's good, and you work with them, and the end result is always going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also really important to have a point of view, because if you have no point of view and it's kind of scattered, there's no, like, you can't really put a stake in the ground.
Well, it also seems like it's important to not have a huge ego.
Yep.
This
absolutely.
Like, that's why you guys are pretty egoless, and then it opens up more possibilities. Well, thank you guys so much. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So good.
It went so quickly.
This episode was brought to you by FreshBooks. Two Working Not Working members, Cooper Smith and Marcus Gartrell, interviewed FreshBooks for an upcoming special episode called Ask an Expert, where we ask smart people who know the things we don't about the things we should. This episode, called Get Rich or Die Crying, is all about how freelancers can get paid on time and how over-designing your invoices is probably not a good idea.
All right, so what's an example of a really bad invoice that you guys have seen?
Oh. I guess to start off, it's funny. A lot of creatives fall in this trap where they would create this beautiful looking invoice that doesn't get them paid, you know? So
yeah, I've never heard anyone say, did you see that invoice? Yeah. Man, that was a nice invoice.
It's a book piece. Janice, get over here. Look at this beautiful invoice. My God, the kerning on this thing.
And submit this thing to archive. It's going to win a lion, this invoice.
This is going to win the Invoicey Awards for sure. Clean up.
Well, I'm glad I took a drink right when you were saying that.
Be sure to listen to that upcoming episode available for download soon. Thanks to Adrian Wagner for editing, Lita and Wade for sharing their stories, and thanks to all the members who came out that day to hear them, and also to you for listening on this little podcast. To read more about this episode, check out freerange.workingnotworking.com, and to learn more about how to join Working Not Working, go to workingnotworking.com. You can follow us at WNotW and tweet us questions with the hashtag WNWOvershare. Anyway, that's it for today's episode. Thanks for coming, and see you next time.